we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. And so one of the great accomplishments of any of us is to be able to control our tongue and to know when to speak and to when to keep our mouth shut. Gossip is a thing that has always been a thing that has done great damage to the people of God. In the 19th chapter of the book of Leviticus, and in the 16th verse of that chapter, Moses in the long ago said, "Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people, neither shall thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord." Now, God knew the great damage that tale-bearing would do. The idea of tale-bearing, the idea of gossip, is idle talk about other people's affairs. And that's something that all of us need to give great attention to, because it's awful easy to talk about other people's affairs. It's awful easy to be a gossip. In the book of Proverbs, in the 11th chapter and the 13th verse, he says, "A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of faithful spirit concealeth the matter." And so he points out that one who is a talebearer, he reveals secrets. He reveals things that ought not to be revealed. The Apostle Paul, as he wrote to the young preacher Timothy in the 5th chapter, he talked about the young widow and why the church was not to take her into the number. And he talked about her behavior and some things that she would do. And he said, "And while they learned to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers." And then he says, "Also busybodies, speaking things which they ought not." The idea of being a busybody is a meddler in other people's affairs. Meddling. Am I a meddler? Do I meddle in affairs that are none of my business? Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes we find ourselves meddling in affairs that have nothing whatsoever to do with us. Now, the Lord is very concerned about my behavior and your behavior along these lines. As he wrote to the church at Thessalonica in the 3rd chapter, and in the 11th verse, he says, "For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies." Busybodies, overseeing other people's affairs. It's a very interesting expression. When we get back to Peter, when he deals with this in 1 Peter 4 and verse 15, he says, "But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters." Now, that expression, as it is found in the original, "busybody in other men's matters," comes from one Greek word, a real long Greek word. The latter part of that word, "busybody," is the idea of bishop. Now, we're familiar with bishops, you see. We have bishops in the church. Bishops oversee a local congregation. You're familiar with bishops. And bishop's oversight. The oversight of a bishop has its beginning and ending with a congregation where they are bishops. And if you look in, if you have American, New American Standard Version, if you look in your footnotes or out to the side, you will see that translation. You will see the idea of oversight. And he says that I am not to become a bishop of other men's matters. In other words, this eldership has no business being a bishop up here at Manslick Road, you see, none whatsoever. The Manslick Road Church, they are autonomous, you see. They are self-governing. Now, Manslick Road might do some things that I might not like, but it's none of my business. They have bishops, and these bishops might not like what they do, but what those bishops do is none of their business, you see. Layman has a brother that's a bishop up there, and layman has no business. Even though they are brothers in the flesh and brothers in the Lord, he has no business whatsoever meddling with his brother, that bishop's decisions. You see that? Now, this is what the Apostle Peter is telling us here. He's telling us that I am not to be a bishop in other people's matters. I am not to be an overseer in other people's matters. All of us are autonomous. Just like you understand the autonomy of a church, you as an individual, your business is autonomous. Those affairs are autonomous affairs. Now, I may not like what you do, and you may not like what I do, and you may think that I don't spend my money right, and I might think you don't spend your money right, but that's none of your business. You're not a bishop in my affairs, unless you see me spending my money for something that is sinful, you see. Now, this is where I think sometimes we all get into trouble, because we don't know where our business ends and another man's business begins, you see. And so that's the reason the Lord has tried to give us some instruction along this line. And so it is a fearful thing. It is a fearful thing because the inclination on the part of all of us is to what, if we're not careful? To meddle. Now, I'll tell you where you finally learn not to meddle. And folks who do meddle get into real trouble. Whenever you get children grown, you see, you get children grown and they leave your house and they form their own household. They have a companion. Now, they have been your children, and you have had the oversight of them, and you have done some meddling, maybe when they were at home, but you don't meddle anymore. My wife sometimes tells me, Sarah says, Donald, they're married, that's none of your business, you know. Sometimes I want to know something that's none of my business. And I may say, why didn't they do that? And she'll say, that's none of your business. Because sometimes I want to be a bishop in their affairs. But it is none of my business. What you have to learn is that your children have to either be successful or make their own mistakes in many things. And so this is a lesson that all of us have some difficulty with. And it is something God addresses himself to. And it is something that can cause me to lose my soul. And James, as he talks in the fourth chapter of the book of James, he talks there in verse 11. He says, speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. Now I think this verse here is parallel to what Jesus said back in the 7th chapter of the book of Matthew, when he says, "Judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that's in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that's in thine own eye? How wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, the beam is in thine own eye, thou hypocrite? First cast the beam out of thine own eye, and thou shalt see clearly to cast the mote out of thy brother's eye." Now here you see Jesus is dealing with censorious judgment, as we exercise it many times against our brethren, and as we set in judgment upon them without any mercy. And you know, we all have and do this from time to time, and we find ourselves, when we know all of the circumstances of a situation, we just find ourselves embarrassed. Have you ever just been so harsh in your judgment? Maybe you didn't express it to anybody, but you had that judgment. You formed that opinion. And then later on, you found out that you did not know top, side, nor bottom about what you're judging about. And then how did you feel? Well, you almost blushed to yourself, you see. But what really makes us blush many times is that we form these harsh, censorious judgments. And then many times we speak them. We speak those judgments. And James is telling me that I am not to speak evil of my brethren. Speak not evil one of another. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law. In other words, he's trying to say, if I have any understanding, that when it comes to my judgment on some things, I'll just set aside the law of God. This is a part that doesn't matter, you know. I'm going to speak what I want to speak. Doesn't care what God's law says about that governs me concerning what I say. But I'll just set it aside. I'll just become what? A judge of the law. That's the law Lord you oughtn't to give. Because I think I ought to be able to set in judgment over here, and I ought to be able to speak what I want to speak. If that's not what he says, I don't know that I understand. But I think these are parallel. Well, as I look at my own life, I find that I have had difficulty with these very things. I find that I still have difficulty in some areas of life where I want to be the bishop in other people's affairs. And I find that the Lord has given very strict guidelines along this line and has warned me that if I am not careful, I can misuse my tongue, and I can be lost. And so the Lord dealt with this both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. You take, going back to Moses and his writings, if you'd go with me to the book of Exodus. In Exodus, the 23rd chapter, and in verse 1, we would hear him say, along these same lines, "Thou shalt not raise up a false report." Then he says, "Put not thy hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness." So here he deals with a false report. And sometimes, if we're not careful, whenever we carry gossip, what do we wind up doing? We wind up carrying false reports, you see. We tell things that are not so. And you know, let me tell you something. Once a false report is put out and men begin to tell a lie, it's the hardest thing in the world to kill. You know, Marilyn O'Hare has done a lot of dastardly deeds. And she's done a lot of things. You know, she brought this ruling in the Supreme Court and ruled the prayers out of the school system. Well, now, I have no defense for her and all of her ugliness, but there are false reports that have been circulating for years on her. And I know better because I have seen documented evidence that this is not so. There has been a report and petitions for years circulated that she is trying to get religious broadcasting off of the air. And now this has been going back since in the 70s. And I remember a Methodist friend of mine down in Alabama who lived across the street from the church building came over one day and he said, and he had this petition and all of this, and he said to Brother Townsley, he said, I think this is very, very important, what this woman is trying to do. And I told him, I said, Mr. So-and-so, I realize your intentions are good, but I just happened to have at that time some documented evidence. I said, Congress really don't want us to write anymore. They're being flooded with these letters, and they have no intention of trying to pass any such bill, and it wouldn't be constitutional to begin with. But now, why have I told you that? I'm simply telling you that any time you get a false report widely circulated, it takes years, and that's just one good example, it takes years to ever kill out that false report. Now, that's very scary. You know, we don't think we are anything many times. And so we talk a lot, whoever listens to me. Well, a lot of people do. You know, the scary thing is to hear people quote you. And as a preacher, you know, I listen to a lot of quotes. I thank God the good quotes that I hear, but I wonder about the bad things I've said. A lot of times people say, and you said, Brother Townsley, and I'll never forget. And I'll never forget this, and you know I forgot it a long time ago. But I learned one thing. If you always tell the truth and try to do what's right, you won't have to remember what you say. But what we say sticks in the minds of people. It sticks in the minds of people, and it influences people. And if I say that which is wrong, then I have influenced people to do that which is wrong. And so that's the reason all of us need to give careful attention to what we say. Now, the techniques that are used in gossiping, you know, there is the blunt technique, and many of us have used the blunt technique. And in the blunt technique we say, well, I don't have any use for Brother Smith. You know, that just start out very bluntly. And I'm not talking about you, Brother Rodney. I don't have any use for Brother Smith. And then we tell all of the gossip about Brother Smith and say, I'd say it to his face. Now, what have we done? Well, that's our blunt technique. That's been the way that we unloaded all of the gossip that we wanted to tell about Brother Smith, you see. And then there is the frankness technique. And we say, well, let me tell you very frankly about this. Well, I don't care how frank it is. We don't have any right to devour a child of God. And sometimes that's what we do to one another. We eat one another up. You know, there is a verse in Galatians 5 and verse 15 that's very challenging along this line. And in the later years of my life as a preacher and going through problems and seeing what brethren do, this verse has been more meaningful to me. I think I understand it better. When the apostle says, "But if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed one of another." He is telling me that we can destroy one another with our tongues. I have seen congregations destroyed, completely destroyed with the tongue. And so we need to recognize that it doesn't matter how frank the matter may be. There's a lot of things. I don't have to tell everything I know. I know a lot of things. You may think I tell a lot. I know a lot of things I don't tell. We don't have to tell it. You don't have to say everything. I'll tell you where you learn. When you get married, you know, sometimes you hadn't got much sense. That's right. Hadn't got much sense. Young man had not got much sense. Not a lot of young men have much sense. I didn't have a lot of sense. I'll tell you that. Didn't have a lot of sense. Took me a long time. You know, I was sort of like a mule. You know, the fella years ago that used to tell the story about a fella had a mule. They used to work mules, wanted him trained. And they brought in this mule trainer, and the first thing the trainer said, "Hunt me a 2x4. And he got a 2x4, and he brought the 2x4 to him, and the first thing he did, he took that 2x4 and knocked the mule down. And he said, "What in the world are you doing? We brought you to train this mule." He said, "You can't train a mule until you get his attention." And so it took me a long time before my attention was ever what it should have been. And so we find ourselves many times saying things to our companion that we can never recall. You know, we just, you don't have to say everything, you know. And sometimes if something's not right, instead of just biting our tongue and going on, we think we have to speak. We think we have to say things. And when we get through saying things, then when we get through with it, we've simply hurt and scarred. And then there is the "I heard and they say" technique. And we all fall into this. How many times have we quoted, "Oh, they say"? Well, who is "they say"? You know, the more I think about "they say," "they say," "they say," well, I tell you, I sort of like a name to folks that I'm going to quote or have some dealings with. "They say," "they say," you know, "they say." There's, I heard. And they say. And we're all guilty of this. We're all guilty of passing on information about what they say. Well, if it's a big lie, what have we done? We have simply engaged in lying with all of the they says. And then there's the subtle technique. Now, you see, this technique really, really gets two people. Somebody's talking about somebody and saying nice things. And you say, "Oh, yes, she is such a nice girl, but watch out, but it is a shame about her bad habit, this and that," and so forth. And so we use these techniques. These are techniques that we get involved with. And then there is the spiritual worry technique. We say, oh, Remus needs our help. Well, what's Remus done? Well, I tell you, he has a problem controlling the flesh. What'd he do? Well, didn't you see how he held Sister in the long back there as she went out? What? Yeah. You see. And so we all need just to look at these things. I need to look at them. I need to think about these things. I need to recognize how devastating my tongue can be. Now, let's look at the devastating results of gossip. Whenever we engage in gossip, talking when we ought not to talk, it discourages a church. Whenever there's a lot of gossip that goes on, brethren become discouraged. They get disheartened. They become disappointed. And it takes a long time to overcome a lot of gossip. Discouraging. A lot of people don't like to hear a lot of gossip. They just don't like to hear a lot of things. And so it's discouraging. And gossip also causes all of us to become abnormally concerned how others may be criticizing us. You know. And we all know a lot of criticism goes with the territory. If you're going to preach, the first thing you recognize is that a lot of criticism goes with the territory. Folks are going to do what I'm talking about. They're going to talk. They're going to criticize. And it goes with being an elder, and it goes with being a song leader, and it goes with being a teacher. But what we need to recognize is that people lose confidence in us when we continually gossip. They really do. Say, well now, so-and-so said this, but you know how he is or she is. And it soon gets that what you say does not have any weight. And the ultimate result of gossip is the damnation of our souls. And that's what should cause all of us to fear. The writer of Proverbs said in Proverbs 10 and verse 18, he that uttereth a slander is a fool. And then James, as he writes in the first chapter of the book of James, and looking down to about verse 26, he says, if any man among you seem to be religious and bridleth not his tongue but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. So I make my religion vain by a misuse of my tongue. But also, why do children of God gossip? Why do we do that? Why do we misuse our tongue? Well, it becomes enjoyable to learn about other people's faults. Oh, it shouldn't. And when it does, we need to examine ourselves. But if we're not careful, it becomes a dainty morsel. You know, the writer of Proverbs, in Proverbs 26, 22, and reading the American Standard Version, says, the words of a talebearer are as wounds, if you're reading the King James, but the American Standard says, they are a dainty morsel. And they go down into the innermost part of the belly. And so their wounds on one side and their morsels on the other. You know, the fellow who is receiving the criticism, their wounds. But many times when you and I engage in talking about others, why do we do it? Well, it's a dainty morsel. Have you heard? Have you heard the latest? You know. And our ears prick up. We want to hear the latest. We don't want to be behind. But we need to think about this. Simply listening to gossip will lure me and you inevitably into gossip. Now, if you want to gossip, you listen to a gossip. And you can't listen long until you'll be tempted to put in your 2 cents worth. And the first thing you know, you see, you've not stopped any gossip. You've simply added to the gossip. And so we need to understand ourselves. Why do we do this? Why do we say things? Subconsciously, it may be a sense of our own weakness and inadequacy that leads us to criticize other people. Sometimes we need to look at ourselves and ask ourselves, is there any jealousy or envy involved? Why am I saying this? You see, the Lord has put a grave responsibility on us when he gave us the tongue. James says it is an unruly evil that no man can tame, can be controlled. It can be controlled. But let's think about some things. How in the world can I overcome gossip? You ever say things and say, well, I sure wished I hadn't said that. Well, number one, if we could just all stick with this. Don't listen to gossip or criticism of others. Just don't listen to it. If a fellow comes with a lot of criticism, tell him to go to the fellow that he's got the criticism on. That's right. If you come to me about this eldership, I'll tell you what I tell you right off. You know that. Some of you know that. I tell you, go right to this eldership. I don't take their messages. I hadn't took them since I've been here, and I don't intend to ever begin to. Whatever message you've got for these fellas, you carry it to them. And whatever message you've got for me, you bring it to me. I'm nobody's mailman. And that's the way we all ought to be, you see, many times. Many times we're not courageous. Many times we're not courageous enough just to come out and to say what we need to say to people. Number one, we ought not to listen to gossip. Number two, we ought to ask ourselves, is this any of my business? Now, that is a good question. Now, I dealt with this. The Bible most certainly deals with this. Gives attention to this, extreme attention. If you get into these verses, he talks about us not being overseers or bishops or meddlers and other men's matters. Is this any of my business whatsoever? You know, you got a lot of business that you can tend to, and you can go to heaven, and I got mine I tend to. It's none of my business, because we're brethren in the church. None of my business. None of my business how much this elder over here makes every year. It's none of my business how he bids a job. It's none of my business the things about his family. That's just none of my business. You know, sometimes we get curiosity to know a lot of those things, but it's none of our business. Now, I need to ask myself the question, is it any of my business? And the Lord addresses himself to that. He says, if it is none of my business, then when I make your business, my business, I'm a meddler. Now, I may not like to recognize that, but that's just the truth. And then I need to ask, am I meddling with what does not concern me? And really, that's the basic idea, you see, of this young woman in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 13, as she is a tattler and going from house to house telling things that she ought not to tell. She's meddling in things that does not concern her. Then I need to ask, do I have a beam in mine own eye while I am trying to get the mote out of my brother's eye? I need to ask myself that. And that's a good question. You know, sometimes when we find ourselves so hypocritical, sometimes we're not honest with ourselves. When we look back at the house we live in, we can see, yes, I got a lot of sweeping I need to do. And that's what the Lord is saying. That's what He's saying. Then I need to ask, do I really love this person? And all of us need to ask that often. The Lord lays down some things that we all need to give a lot of meditation to. In 1 Corinthians 13, He says, love suffereth long and is kind. Love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself, not puffed up. Doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Then I need to ask this question. Ask, how I want other people to treat me, and am I treating this person as I want to be treated? Now, how you want to be talked about? Go back to the golden rule. Go back to Matthew 7 and verse 12. Let me just read that for us. Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. How do I want you to treat me? The golden rule. You know, I read a little article the other day. Sarah got in the mail. About this fellow, and he said he learned everything really he needed to know before he got out of kindergarten. And it was a sight what children learn before they get out of kindergarten, how to treat one another and this whole thing. And sometimes if we just remember what we learned in kindergarten, we'd be better off. Now I need to ask myself that. How do I want you to treat me? How would I want to be treated? Under certain circumstances, if certain things happen to me, how would I want you to treat me? Well, I think I know how I want you to treat me. And you know how you want me to treat you. I think all of this will help every one of us as we deal with one another. And in Proverbs 26 and 20, we all need to get this in our understanding. Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no tale bearer, the strife ceases. And then I need to ask, what kind of effect does my gossip have on the church? As I said, I've given a lot of attention to this, and I have tried to be more and more careful as I've grown older with what I say. And I'm not a perfect man. I still slip and say things I ought not to say. But I know the far-reaching effect that it has upon a people. And those are lessons we need to learn. We need to let soak in. Now, none of us here are above the law. Remember, I read from James. The whole problem with this is to become judges of the law and not practicers of the law. The law applies to me. All of us have a tongue. And one of the great problems that all of us have is the controlling of the tongue. It is that which does great damage. Ask, why should I expect God's mercy when I have been so merciless in my own gossip? And all of us need to ask ourselves that. That's what James again is talking about. If I have shown no mercy, God will what? Show no mercy. We are a people of mercy. God is a God of mercy. We are a people who are to be pure and stand up and stand against sin. But we are a people, as we deal with one another, when we have sinned and corrected our sins, we must be merciful to one another. Because I'm going to tell you, I'm in no position to be in any other state with you, because as I look at my own sin, I need your mercy. I don't need your justice. I need your mercy. Somebody says they want the justice of God. I don't want the justice of God. I'll go to hell if he gives me what's just. I need his mercy. And that's what all of us need. I need to ask, what is my motive in telling this? What will it benefit? Who will profit from it? And then I need to ask God's help in prayer to overcome the misuse of the tongue. David of old had a problem along this line, and we hear him say, as he writes in Psalms 141 and verse 3, he says, as he talks to the Lord, he says, set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth, keep the door of my lips. O Lord, put a watch on me and keep the door of my lips. Because the door of my lips get me into more trouble than just about any other thing. And the door of my lips can cause more trouble than just about anything. And that's the reason the Lord addressed himself from Genesis to Revelation, so to speak, upon the business of our unruly member. Now, this is a lesson that is for everybody at Hebron Lane. It is for the preacher. It is for the elders. It is for the least to the biggest in size. And I'd probably be among the biggest in size. But we all need it. So, apply this to you. I apply it to me. And we'll all be a better people. If you're here this morning